Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Today, we continue on the subject of leadership in your workplace, small business, volunteer organization, or community. And we've all seen lists of businesses ranked as best place to work in various publications. And that's great for employees of those businesses, but is it good for the bottom line? It's the old carrot versus the stick argument, I guess. As small business owners and company leaders, can we become so generous and accommodating to our employees that they become complacent? Is it possible to light a fire under employees, motivating them to continually strive for excellence, while at the same time they are enjoying the good life on the job? In simple terms, are good workplaces good for business? Well, my first guest today, Dr. Rosalind Glickman, says definitely yes. And she points out that the top 100 best places to work companies in the Fortune 500 doubled annual growth rates versus their competitors. And she's here to explain why the goal for your business or not-for-profit enterprise should not just be a good place to work, but the best place to work. And more importantly, she's here to offer suggestions on how to transform your enterprise, whatever its size, into that best place to work. And Rosalind Glickman, Ph.D., is a thought leader and international best-selling author of the book Optimal Thinking, How to Be Your Best Self, and her book is in its seventh printing and in 17 languages. She's president of the World Academy of Personal Development, Inc. in Los Angeles, and is a leading authority in personal and business optimization. She has delivered over 2,500 presentations to corporations, associations, colleges, and business groups, and has provided over 30,000 hours of one-on-one coaching to Fortune 500 leaders, senior executives, entrepreneurs, and rising stars like us. And she's consulted with companies and government agencies, including Johnson & Johnson, Warner Brothers, the U.S. Army, and the IRS, and she's known far and wide as the Optimal Thinking Woman and has appeared in numerous publications and on TV, including Fox News Network and the CBS Weekend Magazine. And welcome, Dr. Glickman. It is indeed an honor to have you with us today.
Thank you, Roy, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, please begin by giving us the distinction between a good or even a great place to work and being the best place to work. Isn't great good enough?
Well, you know, you can be great at anything, but is that leaving something on the table?
Yeah.
For example, a great opportunity is not necessarily your best opportunity.
I see.
So when we optimize, we complete. We're not left with should've, could've, and would've.
Yeah, those old should've's we're always talking about are so pointless when you go back and fret over them.
Exactly.
Well, what are some of the benefits to business owners, shareholders, and customers from being a best place to work? How does this positively impact the bottom line?
Well, best places to work achieve twice the value growth than industry peers.
I see.
That's amazing. And what's interesting is most CEOs and senior executives do not know about this. They believe that a best place to work is just a PR visibility issue. But actually, there are lots of benefits. For example, best places to work attract the best and brightest talent.
Yes,
they have a lower employee turnover than their industry peers.
Yeah, you attract them and then you keep them because you keep them motivated and inspired.
Right, you keep them motivated and inspired, and you care about how they can bring the best version of themselves to work every day.
Yeah.
And they go above and beyond what's expected of them. You know,
right.
Employees who feel that the company will will provide an environment where they can be their best,
yeah,
appreciate it. And
yeah,
so they, you know, you also have superior customer loyalty than the industry,
yeah,
peers, because your employees go the extra mile.
Yeah,
and
you
vendors
can always tell
go
whether
the extra mile.
When you're dealing with a company, you can always tell whether the employee likes their job or not.
Right, right, absolutely. Some employees are just surly and give you the minimum amount,
yeah,
of customer service, and then you've got those that just do all they can to help the customer to get the best possible service.
Yeah. Well, let's get down to where rubber meets the road. As leaders, how can we transform our business from average or above average to the best? And you state it all comes down to optimal thinking, both by leaders and employees, top to bottom. First of all, what is optimal thinking, and how is that different from positive thinking?
Well, optimal thinking is the thinking we all use when our best self takes charge and we're giving life our best shot. It's the thinking we use when we say, what's the best use of my time right now? How,
yeah,
can I make the most of this situation? What is the best solution? We all use this peak form of thinking, but we use it randomly. Some people use it occasionally. Some people use it more frequently, but
right,
none of us use it all the time. It's,
yeah,
the mental basis of peak performance. So what my company does and what my book Optimal Thinking is about is identifying this peak form of thinking as a thinking that goes above and beyond moderately positive thinking, which,
yeah,
might be used to look for a good solution or an acceptable solution,
yeah,
rather than the best solution,
yeah,
or even extraordinarily positive thinking,
yeah,
which where people might look for a great solution or an outstanding solution, but not the greatest or most outstanding solution. So optimal thinking is just a skill and an art that I believe we never learnt at school. We never isolated this peak,
sure,
form of thinking. I know we didn't in Australia, and from my experience working with executives and employees and CEOs and,
yeah,
and educational organisations and government all over the world, it's never been. It was not a formal type of education. We weren't taught to think this way.
Yeah.
So what we do is we introduce optimal thinking into an organization,
yeah,
and basically show everyone that you're already using this peak form of thinking.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And we give employees and executives the tools to use this peak form of thinking consistently. So not only can they bring the best version of themselves to work every day, but they can empower others.
Yeah,
when
see,
they get off track
you
by saying, well, what do you think is the best option or what's
you,
the best
you,
we can do?
You
or
become
who's
aware
the
of when you have optimally thought, and once you do that, then you become conscious and you start doing it again intentionally. I guess that's what you're saying.
Exactly, exactly. And you can monitor yourself. You can say, you know, is this in our best interest?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was fascinating. You say there were four categories of suboptimal thinking. And negative thinking, obviously, is one, but even positive thinking, and then there's mediocre thinking and even extraordinary thinking, but not quite optimal. So
yes, well, you've got shades of positive thinking. For example,
yeah,
you can have moderately positive or mediocre positive thinking,
yeah,
and you can have extraordinary positive thinking. And actually, they have different drivers. For example, the moderately positive thinker, well, you know, we've done a lot of research on that. I did a lot, actually. And
yeah,
what I found was that moderately positive thinkers usually are support staff in organizations.
Yeah.
And they're really the glue in our society,
yeah,
because their driver is acceptance.
Yeah.
They're mainstream people. They adhere to rules and regulations, and they care about others. They have generally empathetic. And the moderately positive thinkers, you'll see in customer service as well.
Yeah,
extraordinarily
you like to have those
positive
folks around
thinkers
because they don't really challenge your thinking. I mean,
right,
if you're less
right
than an optimal thinker yourself,
but
they
support
also,
you.
Yeah,
They'll support the extraordinary thinker who wants to be above the ordinary, who wants to make a difference.
Yeah.
And they'll support them. And so the problem can be that extraordinary thinkers might look down on a moderately positive or mediocre positive thinker instead of recognize the value. So optimal thinkers value all thinking.
I see.
We value negative thinking because negative thinking can be valuable.
It was interesting the way you point that out, that sometimes it's good to think about certain things negative if they are negative. Or
exactly.
To recognize reality.
Exactly. Exactly. So long as you don't dwell on it and you use it as a precursor to optimization. Well, you know, why is this so, and what are my options for resolving this, and what's the best solution?
Yeah, I love that example you had of the real estate developer that had a whole list of option people he'd turn to if there was a problem in one of his buildings so that he recognized reality and the possibility of reality, but he had a positive game plan to optimize the results if the reality happened.
Yes, exactly, exactly. So I can tell you've read my book and you've read the last chapter.
Well, as a leader, you're not going to inspire colleagues and those reporting to you unless you optimally think yourself. And
exactly.
We're in our 40s, 50s, and 60s, and most of us were conditioned early in life, usually as a small children, to recognize our limitations and to be satisfied with simply fitting in and doing a good job. You know, we all went through that as kids, you know, you're not good enough to do this or that. Is transformation to optimal thinking still possible at middle age or beyond? And how do we condition our brains to think optimally, and how long will it take?
You know, I love that question. First of all, that it doesn't matter what age you are or in what stage of life you're in, you can instantly make the decision to use optimal thinking because we all live in the present moment.
Yeah.
That's all we have, that's all we've ever had, and that's all we will ever have.
That's true.
So we can choose to think optimally in the present moment or suboptimally.
I see.
Right?
Yeah.
And we're all going to get off track.
Yeah.
You know, I've written the book, and I sometimes get off track. But the name of the game is to think optimally as frequently as possible, to choose intentionally to do that.
And not
and
to beat yourself over the head if you have an occasional lapse, right?
Yeah, exactly. But when you have that lapse, to get back on, to recognize it as quickly as possible and get back on your best track with minimum time loss.
Yeah,
and that's what our training, my book and my audio programs and my assessments and all our work is dedicated to achieving that that consistent optimization so that you're not left with could have, should have, regret.
Yeah. Well, if your business or organization currently is lagging, say profits down, employee morale low, customers complaining, how does optimal thinking help you to deal with negative people and negative situations all around you?
Well, the first thing is to recognize what you can change and what you can't change.
Amen.
Accept what you can't change and make the most of what you can change.
Yeah, like those of us that sit around all the time and worry about the national government and things they're doing wrong or what we hear on these talk shows. And
right,
really,
unproductive if we can't do anything about it.
That's exactly
I mean, if
right.
we can go to our congressperson and provide some information or some reference to our congressperson or to make some contribution
and some positive
so that we feel that we've given our best, that's fine. But just to sit around and hear negative issues and just basically be unproductive about it, it's really, it becomes unproductive behavior.
Yeah, that's for certain. And it doesn't help you or anyone else.
Exactly.
Okay, you're a company executive, department manager, or a small business owner, and you've begun yourself to think optimally. But as a leader, how can you inspire employees throughout your enterprise, top to bottom and all around, to optimally think alongside you? How do you get that message out to your employees and your staff and other people around you that
Well, if you're a leader and you're an optimal thinker, and there are many natural optimal thinkers who think optimally a lot, you know, think optimally very, very frequently, there are two ways. One, you can hire optimal thinkers, and that's
good.
A really good idea, because optimal thinking, optimal thinkers are intrinsically motivated. What optimal thinkers do their best regardless of the circumstances.
Yeah.
Their motto is, I do my best no matter what, right? They don't need a pat on the back from management or compensation to do their best, or a raise or a bonus.
Yeah.
They do their best regardless.
Yeah.
So you want to, I would suggest to any leader to hire optimal thinkers who, of course, have the skills necessary and to do the job.
Yeah.
And that would be your best bet.
And you usually pick these out in the job interviews, or is
it? We have an assessment, the optimal thinking assessment,
I see.
Basically, we hiring departments, more than 6,500 companies use that assessment, and basically they screen candidates, and also it's not only diagnostic, but it's prescriptive. It enables you to see, or the person who's using the assessment, how to best communicate with all types of thinkers, from negative thinkers, from extraordinarily negative thinkers through to extraordinarily positive thinkers, how to best communicate in the toughest to the best situations. So, and it really reveals a lot. It's very accurate, super accurate.
I think the extraordinarily negative thinking, I think, or if I were a hiring person, I'd say, hey, my competitor down the street is really looking for someone like you.
Yeah, but you know something? You're absolutely right if someone is just totally negative.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're really going to be very hard to deal with. But if someone has a lot of negative thinking plus optimal thinking, they're excellent in quality control.
Yeah,
because they see the flaws in products and services and figure out, well, let's look at what's the best thing we can do about it.
Yeah, as long as they offer a positive alternative. And not
as long as they offer the optimal solution. For example, the kind of person who recognizes it's going to rain today, so let's take an umbrella.
Yeah.
Instead of the wishful thinker who says, well, it's not going to rain, it's going to rain today. Well, I hope it won't rain today. Just be positive, it'll all work out fine.
Well, how do you just talk about hiring the positive, the optimal thinker, but what about Fred Smith in accounting that's been around for a few years, or Nancy Green in customer service that just is there earning a paycheck? And you talk to Nancy Green in accounting or in customer service, and she says, well, Sue Jones at the next desk just does enough to get by, and she's paid the same salary and benefits as me, so why should I optimally think?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there are several options. They can come to our website, optimalthinking.com, and look around for freebies, free things that they can impart to their employees.
Yeah.
But basically, it's training.
Yeah.
So we have a team of trainers, and I train myself, and coaching. And basically, what you do with the employees who've basically been used to all types of thinking is just introduce them to optimal thinking through training.
Yeah.
And let me just give you an example. Some years ago, I was training in a government organization. They had called me in, and they were sitting on some cases for 5 years, five-year-old cases.
Oh,
can you imagine?
No.
And some of the employees were about to retire, and they were really just going along to get along. Not just some of them, many of them.
Yeah.
And basically, I said to them, if you don't, all we have is the present moment.
Yeah.
And if you don't make the most of the present moment, if you don't put your best self in charge in the present moment, you get into the habit, then the next moment you're going to be in the same situation. But if you do make the choice to flex that muscle, to be your best and welcome your best self. Put your best self in charge regardless of the circumstances, even if it's a disaster.
Yeah.
What would my best self do in this situation?
Yeah.
If you do that, you put yourself in the best position for the next moment.
Yeah.
And then if you do that in the next moment, you put yourself in the position for the next moment. And then when you retire, that muscle will already be working beautifully, and you'll be able to make the most of your retirement.
That's exactly right.
But if you're out of the habit of making the most of the present moment and being lazy in terms of putting your best self in charge, it's most likely that you'll ruin your retirement as well.
Yeah, it's amazing, these people that just drag along waiting for retirement, and they really don't have any idea what they're going to do when they retire. Maybe they travel around for 6 months or something, and then they burn out on that and pretty much just sit around waiting, you know, for the next stage.
Yeah, exactly. And I got to tell you, Roy, the beauty of that was that we had a huge turnaround in the company. Just a huge turnaround.
Yeah.
Sorry, it was a government organization,
yeah.
But a huge turnaround in that people, a light went off, and they realized that all they have is the present moment, and to get into, to recognize that your life is composed of you making your own best moments.
Yeah,
and you can only do that when your best self is in charge.
Yeah, that's why we all need to realize that, and that's really optimal thinking. You know, in your book, I love the example you have of comparisons between AnyBiz and OptiBiz. And I love that example you gave about citing different responses to the complaint. These customers get on my nerves. Can you give us that example? Because I thought that was really great, the difference in thinking between those two companies.
Yeah, well, in any company, you know, someone might say, yeah, these companies get on my nerves. And someone might say, well, just grin and bear it, right?
You
just have to grin
job,
and bear it. And that would be pretty common, right?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, well, you know, what's the issue?
Yeah.
You know, what's causing the problem?
Yeah, what am I, and how can I make the problem better myself rather than just blaming the customers?
Right. What do you think are the options, and what do you think is best?
Yeah.
And how can you be your best? Or what do you think is the best result, and how can you best achieve it?
Yeah, how can you get over? Are you partly to blame for the annoying the customers? And how
can you, exactly. You know, what are you thinking or feeling to create this situation?
Yeah, that's such a difference in reference, and it's so much different from just complaining rather than think about what can I do to make the situation better.
Right.
And
even going beyond better, because better can just be a step above inadequate.
That's right.
But what's the best thing we can do under the circumstance will always leave you with a sense of completion. Then you can give it up to the cosmic accountant and move on with your next supremely important issue.
Well, what are some of the basic core issues that are most commonly found in best places to work enterprises? Are there certain core values that seem to be in those among
the core issues? Well, basically, best place to work organizations have very high employee satisfaction.
Yeah.
And because there's really high employee satisfaction, the employees serve as ambassadors for the organization.
Yeah, and they support each other too. They're not competing.
Exactly.
You know, the worst thing is this intercompany warfare between departments and some kind of garbage that go on like that. And
you know, in best place to work organizations, we look for collaboration rather than competing. We look for optimizing collaboration.
Yes, that's right.
And also, you know, you have much higher customer loyalty than industry peers because the employees really go that extra mile. And they also have greater visibility in the marketplace because when you've got, let's say, for example, Wedgman's Food Markets, okay, they've been a best place to work for years. Now, why the customers come back – time and time again, because the employees are committed.
Yeah.
You know, they just want to come back to a place where, or a market where they're going to be treated well by employees.
Yeah, we have a market here that says a friendly smile in every aisle, and you pretty much get that.
I love that. I love that. So they've got it right. And, of course, you know, it's not a touchy-feely initiative to become a best place to work, because research has shown that best places to work double their value growth compared to their peers. And if they're on just one publication, major publication, we in our work, we are able to get organizations onto multiple best place to work lists,
and then
they can get even more visibility and higher value growth.
Oh, that's great.
It's really, you know, once you become acknowledged as a best place to work, you have better relationships with legislators, with vendors, and with the community at large. And then people seek to become employed in your organization.
Yeah.
So you really have the pick of the best.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, in the time remaining, let's talk a little bit about your international bestseller, Optimal Thinking, How to Be Your Best Self. How is your book organized? I guess there's three different parts to it, aren't there?
There's the first of all, there's Help Yourself to Optimal Thinking, which is basically learning about optimal thinking, the difference between positive and optimal thinking, how to make optimal decisions for simple decisions and complex decisions like changing your career or moving to another country or going through a divorce, complex decisions. And then the core beliefs that stop you from thinking optimally. You know, if you don't believe you deserve the best in life, it's going to be harder for you to use optimal thinking. You're going to have to be much more mindful about using optimal thinking. So it's in your best interest to resolve those beliefs that sabotage your best interest. Uncovering those core beliefs. And then the next section is optimize yourself. So we go through your self-concept and your self-esteem, how that's put together and how to optimize that, your direction, pursuing your optimal direction, what is your real optimal purpose, your ultimate purpose, and how to best plan to achieve that, and then how to optimize all emotion, because emotions are, you know, are signals. They tell us whether we are, what we're doing is or isn't in our best interest.
Yeah.
They tell us about our soul's calling. And unfortunately, too many people disassociate from their emotions. They drink, they shop, they eat rather than feel their feelings and resolve their feelings.
Yeah.
So that chapter on optimize your feelings absolutely helps you understand the messages that each emotion is telling you and then help you to best resolve them so that you can move on and not just keep being stuck in that emotion.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And you know, an emotion that's not resolved just ends up, you know, being neglected, and then it becomes stronger. It starts off as a whisper often and then ends up as a scream. So until you resolve it. So that's that section. And the second section, and then the third section is optimize others, which is about bringing out the best in others.
Yeah,
and
that's
the first chapter is about optimizing communications, conflicts, assertive communications, and then the final one is how to be an optimal leader.
Yeah, that's what we've been talking about today. But obviously, you have to walk the walk before you can talk the talk and bring anyone else along with you. So that's why it's so essential to master those first two parts of the book first. But
yes.
Well, where's the best thing, what's the best way to preview and purchase your book? I guess it's available just about anywhere, but...
Yes, I think, you know, nowadays it's best to get it off Amazon.com or anyone can come to OptimalThinking.com and get an autographed copy.
Oh.
And also the assessment is marvelous for anyone midlife. You really can learn a lot. And, you know, I run a program for not only just for people who are working, but I also run a program for executives who are out of work.
Yeah.
And who've and there's so many middle-aged people who are on the sidelines now. And I've often said to them, you know, you're in transition, but we're all in the transit lounge.
And the point is, are you going to be in control of your transition positively, pointing yourself in the right direction, or are you just going to let the winds of opportunity just blow your way and hope for the best?
Exactly. So, you know, we're all in transition from this present moment to the next present moment. We're all on an equal playing ground.
Yeah.
And so if anyone is in transition right now, it's an opportunity to become a consistent optimal thinker, which is absolutely within your control.
Yeah,
and instead of focusing on what's out of your control, just get totally focused on making the most of what's within your control, bringing the best version of yourself to the present moment as consistently as possible, and that's your formula to making your best life and your best career.
Yeah, it makes so much sense to take time out to optimally think and to master yourself before you go out and beat the bushes looking for that other position.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, it's not many people have just been, you know, been in the situation where the company downsized or a younger version of themselves got the job.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can tend to have your self-esteem hit by that.
Yeah, that's for
But
sure.
It's really an opportunity to say, okay, let me look at the value within myself and how can I, you know, how can I put my best self in charge and really get into that? And that will be your formula to your greatest success.
And what is your website again so that people can learn all about all those opportunities and resources that you have?
My website is optimalthinking.com and anyone can reach us. It's O-P-T-I-M-A-L. THINKING.com. And anyone can reach us at 310-461-1446. We're here in Los Angeles, and we're here during business hours Monday to Friday.
Okay. Well, in conclusion, any regular listener knows that a recurring theme of this program is getting out of a middle-aged rut, used to settling for things the way they are just because we feel powerless to change them. And that's not necessary. And we've long been an advocate of affirming and visualizing a joyful and productive outcome for the second half of your life. And I'm extremely grateful to Dr. Rosalene Glickman for clarifying with us today that a simple change in orientation from negative to positive by itself is not enough. You also need to ask and answer those questions that will direct you to optimal thinking, prompting you to strive for and accomplish your absolute best in any situation. And once you're at your very best at all times, you'll come to appreciate and benefit from every moment that you're alive. And equally important, you'll learn to communicate and motivate others to optimally think as well, and thereby you'll lift your business or your organization or your family or the people around you to new heights of performance as well. And your business will become a best place to work enterprise. You'll be producing true win-win results for yourself, for your employees, their families, your customers, your shareholders, and the communities you live in. And if you haven't already, I highly recommend you preview Rosalind Glickman's book, Optimal Thinking. And now let's go out and not have a great day, but the greatest of days. And thank you so much, Dr. Glickman, for your inspiring message, and best of success in continuing to spread it around the globe.
Thank you so much, Roy. It's been an absolute pleasure to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And tune in again next week when we'll have more positive thoughts on leadership and your career. Years ago, there was a pro wrestler who was nicknamed the Chef because he liked to bite his opponents in the ring. And my next guest is not a wrestler, but at 4 years old, she bit other children out of anger and sent several to hospital emergency rooms. Unfortunately, Robin Wheeler outgrew her biting by age 5, but for the next 30 years, she suffered from chronic anger, anxiety, and depression. How about you, or maybe someone you love? Do you lose your temper too often, usually over insignificant minor irritations? Do you routinely blow up and say things you're sorry for later? Do you hold grudges and remain angry over something that happened a long time ago? And do you concentrate on the negative, finding fault in those around you, and anticipating a bad final result? Well, Robin Wheeler is here to tell you why for so many years she was angry, and how it eventually led her to thoughts of suicide, and how she overcame that anger and turned her life around. And her mission today is to help other angry people do the same. And Robin Wheeler is a recognized expert on dysthymic disorder, anger management, and overcoming depression. She's owner of Born Mad LLC, a company dedicated to helping others with those conditions. She's an inspirational public speaker and success coach, and author of the award-winning book Born Mad, and a second book, 104 Ways to Starve Your Anger and Feed Your Soul. I love that title. And hello, Robin, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, in your book, you reveal you were diagnosed in 2010 after suffering from years from dysthymic disorder. And what is dysthymia, and how common is it? And tell us a little about that disorder.
Dysthymic disorder is a low-grade chronic depression. It is something that is always there, and most people who have dysthymia have difficulty feeling joy or happiness. It's something that I just thought everybody was like me, so it's something that I've lived with for so long that I just thought, you know, my depressed mood was just normal.
Yeah.
And about 3-6% of the population suffer from dysthymia, which is more than schizophrenia and bipolar combined, which a lot of people have heard of schizophrenia and bipolar, but not a lot of people are familiar with dysthymic disorder.
Yeah, I had never heard of it until I saw your promotion for your book. It's amazing that so many people would suffer from that, and yet it's never talked about.
Right, right. And I never knew about it either until I was diagnosed. And I want to talk about it and get it out there and have people become aware of it so that people who may have it can seek help before it gets to the point where, like me, it turns into a major depression.
Yeah.
If it's left untreated, it can turn into a major depression, and then that's when people start thinking about suicide and taking their own life.
When's the most common onset? Do people get dysthymia? Does it first appear in middle age or young adults or young children even? When does it usually start?
Yeah, it usually, believe it or not, starts in young children or adolescents, and I believe I've suffered from this since I was very young.
Wasn't your nickname when you were a tiny child Firebucket?
Yes, my nickname was Firebucket, and I did bite several of my preschool classmates, and I think I actually got kicked out of preschool. So I was a juvenile delinquent by the time I was 4.
Kicked out of preschool on your permanent record.
Yeah. And I got the name Firebucket because I threw a temper tantrum when I was about 2 years old, and my face just turned beet red, and of course I have red hair, and so my godfather took one look at me and said, "Wow, she's just a little bucket of fire, isn't she?" And then Firebucket for the rest of my childhood.
Since you were a redhead, I suppose people thought it was natural that you got angry.
right.
I don't know that red people are more subject to dysthymia than other people, but.
Yeah, and now, believe it or not, I very rarely ever get angry, and I'm very good at talking myself out of getting angry because I know that if I get angry, I will make a decision that I won't like, you know, in the future.
Yeah.
I'll make the worst decision possible. So I try to talk myself out of getting angry and then just kind of looking at the facts of the situation and going from there and making a decision on that.
Well, you point out that unlike major depression, most sufferers are unaware that they have dysthymia and are able to function, hold a job, and form relationships, even though they're not joyful, like you said. What are some common symptoms we should look for that could tip us off that we or a loved one suffers from this disorder?
And that's a good question. And, you know, a lot of people who suffer from major depression, you know, sometimes can't hold down a job.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have difficulty raising children or doing daily things.
Yeah.
People with dysthymia have just a mild depression, so most of the time they can hold down a job, but they have very low energy and feel fatigued all the time.
Yeah.
They feel hopelessness. Maybe they have some insomnia, social withdrawal, poor concentration, difficulty making decisions, irritability, chronic anxiety, excessive or inappropriate feelings of guilt. And what I found interesting is that 3/4 of people with dysthymia also suffer from another psychiatric disorder, like an anxiety disorder or a drug addiction or alcoholism, OCD, you know, those types of things. So when they're both mixed together, that makes it even more difficult to diagnose.
Well, left untreated, does dysthymic disorder, I know in your case it did, but does it tend for most people to get worse? Or does it stay about the same as we grow older? You know, is it something most people can live with and still live a relatively normal life, although an unhappy one, or is it really necessary to get treatment for it?
You know, I think it is really necessary to get treatment for it, and that may not be prescription medication. Maybe it's an alternative therapy. Maybe it's talk therapy. Maybe it's a combination of all of them. And I think there's still so little research on dysthymic disorder and how people feel. And since people who have the disorder can have some symptoms and not others, and then you can talk to another person and they have totally different symptoms and not others. And the intensity can vary as well. So I've talked to people who have dysthymia and they didn't mention anything about being angry, but they did mention about having social phobias and being an alcoholic and things like that. So it falls on a spectrum, kind of like autism, where you can see somebody who has a mild autism and then there's severe autism. So I think dysthymia is the same way, and it just all depends on the individual person. For me, I did so much better after I got treatment. I mean, my whole life just turned around and everything changed. And
well, if you
so
suspect
it's amazing how the way you look at things can change if you're happy and in a good mood and not angry all the time.
Yeah, that's for sure. If you suspect you or a loved one may be suffering from dysthymic disorder, where should you go for diagnosis? Would your primary physician likely recognize it, or how about a professional counselor, or where would you go?
You know, many of the general practitioners do not recognize dysthymic disorder. And they are not as up on how to treat it as maybe a psychiatrist. And that's how I was actually diagnosed. I went to a counselor for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had temporary relief. I have ups and downs. And then one day I just called her and said, you know, you have to do something. You have to help me, or I'm just going to end it. And she recommended me to see a psychiatrist. And in about an hour, he had me diagnosed with dysthymic disorder. So I think the best person to go to would be a psychiatrist.
I see. Well, what are the recognized causes of dysthymia, and what are some effective treatment options? You mentioned that medication is one, and there may be others.
You know, dysthymia is, what should I say? It can be treated with different kinds of prescription medication. And a lot of people don't really want to take the prescription medication. Maybe they're on several already for other diseases or whatever, or they just don't like the idea of taking medication. You can use, different alternatives. There's some herbalistic things like St. John wort and D DHA that is supposed to have benefits, you know, to mood disorders and things like that. My medication targets serotonin and norepinephrine, which is two of the three chemicals that regulate your happiness and your mood and your anger that's in your brain.
So, I see. So there, it's a, like a chemical imbalance in the brain is what's causing the problem, I guess, isn't it?
It's a chemical imbalance in the brain. There's also, it's very genetic. So if you have other people in the family who have dysthymic disorder, and, you know, your parents or your grandparents or the older people in your family are the people who will influence you in making decisions and how you act and how you behave.
Yeah.
And so if they have it, then you kind of take on that perspective of, you know, how they see things. So
yeah, so there's often a family of grouches then.
What's that?
I said we often see families of grouches.
Yes, yes. And there can be hormonal changes. For me, I didn't find out I had dysthymia until I was in my mid-40s.
Oh,
and so that might have had a lot of things to do with, you know, my hormones changing and things like that. And you know, as you grow, you see things a little bit differently. But there are several causes. The main, or I should say things that contribute to it.
Yeah.
But the main cause is the chemical imbalance in the brain.
I see. Well, let's talk about your award-winning book, Born Mad. How would you summarize its message?
You know, I just started talking about the way I grew up and the way I made decisions, and I went all through what happened to me in, you know, 10 years ago or so, which led me to being diagnosed. And then the second part is a more happy, upbeat message about staying positive and being inspirational and changing the way that you think. A lot of times if you change the way you think about things, then that can make a whole difference.
Yeah, it makes a world of difference. I love the way you tell stories. I think stories are so much more effective than, you know, a personal story than just a bunch of cold facts, scientific facts about a disease or a condition
right.
or something that...
Right. And I do have a lot of facts in there about dysthymic disorder, but, you know, I've only found one other book on dysthymic disorder, and the woman didn't really write anything personal. She didn't really write how it affected her. And so I wanted my stories of my mistakes and the way I felt about things. And so I put those in the book, hoping that that would help people.
Yeah, most important. I like your message of hope, and you describe how much better your life has become since you've got treatment, and I think it's wonderful the way you're helping others and seeking to help others through that book and through your speaking engagements and the, your organization you have there. But where should people go to preview or purchase your book?
They can go to Born Mad is actually on ebook, as well as in paperback and in hardback. So they can either go to my website, which is bornmad.org.
Yeah.
I also have another one, robinwheeler.com. Yeah. People can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, if they want the ebook to download on Kindle. Those are available. So it's out there on the Internet.
Yeah. Now, well, if you or a loved one routinely wake up mad to the world and have trouble controlling your anger, or just plain ill at ease with the world and with people around you, I would highly recommend you preview Robin Wheeler's book, Born Mad. Like I said, I'd never heard of dysthymic disorder, I can't even pronounce it, but it just could be impacting you, and I think her message is really inspirational, and I think you should definitely check into that, and you just might find your way out to a second half of life filled with peace, hope and happiness, and that's really what this program's all about, a joyful second half of life from middle age and beyond. And thanks a million, Robin, for joining us today. And once
thank
again,
you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
That website is www.bornmad.org.
Yes.
And thanks a million, and best of success in sale of your book, and both your books, actually, and in all your other activities.
All right. Thank you so much.
In closing, I want to remind you of our brand new Middle Age Renewal bookstore. and you'll find it on our website, www.middleagerenewal.com, and then you hit the store tab. Instead of searching all over Amazon or Barnes & Noble, it's your one-stop store for books on midlife renewal, both for individuals and businesses. We offer books in five major categories, very inspirational books on personal midlife renewal, business leadership and career, marriage, parenting, and relationships, exercise and nutrition, and spiritual connection. And we offer books by guests on this program, some of the best, including Optimal Thinking by today's guest, Rosalind Glickman. We also offer a few of the perennial bestsellers in the fields of personal and organization renewal and business leadership. You know, the holidays are approaching, so check out our store today. And once again, that address is www.middleagerenewal.com. That would be a great gift for anyone at middle age who is not totally satisfied with their lives and wants to read about ways that they can improve theirs today. And thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you again next week on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.